The dynamics of work are changing quickly. How we work, where we work, and what technology we use are all forcing a lot of rethinking for companies, as well as employees. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton discusses the ins and outs of work in the 21st century. That conversation starts now.
Hello, and thanks for listening, as always. If you've looked for a job in, I don't know, the past 5 years or so, you've also noticed that the workplace has changed. In crowded cities, telecommuting is now called remote work, and your instant messaging skills, those are going to be greatly tested. And companies are focusing more and more on their cultures, how they want to be perceived, and how they manage expectations with their human capital.
Let's live in the moment from a standpoint of the jobs market and realize they're there. Go to school, get your certification, take additional classes. If you work hard, there are great opportunities available in every single state in the country.
This week, I ask a labor market expert, workplace consultant, and founder of LaSalle Networks to help us get a better grip on what work looks like, especially for anyone who is changing fields or re-entering the workplace, perhaps somebody a little farther down their career path. Preparing messaging and culture for bosses and workers. That starts now.
Tom Gimbel, founder, CEO, LaSalle Network.
Tom, thanks for your time again, and welcome back. I'd like to start with something that seems to be more and more happening, and that's off-site employees. When I was at another network, I had a team of freelancers that I would basically manage through instant messaging, through GChat. Is that continuing, or have things gotten hopefully a little bit more efficient?
Companies are doing it in a variety of different ways. And really, one of the challenges is, or several of the challenges are, that companies delegate that to managers of how they're going to do it. And usually what managers do is what is easiest for them. So if it's GChat for you, great. If it's email for somebody else, okay. If another manager likes email, then that's how it goes. And the best managers I see are the ones that mold their communication style around their remote employees. Not what the employee wants, but what the employee needs. And one thing I'm seeing a lot more of, and in fact I use it myself, is using FaceTime. And the ability to not have to be at your computer, the ability to be on your phone, wherever you're at, if you're sitting in a parking lot, if you're sitting in your kitchen, wherever you may be, but the ability to see someone's eyes when you're talking about them is a huge differentiator in managing remote employees.
And this is going to sound probably like a dumb question, but you are able to read body language, obviously, a little better that way. Do you find that productivity goes up with that, too, because of the fewer back and forth on GChat?
I think that still happens on some of the nuances, and you can't, employees are going to do what they want to do, whether they're in your office or they're working out of their kitchen table. There are employees that are good and productive, and there are ones that waste time. There's ones that get 8 hours done in 8 hours, and there's ones that get 4 hours done in 8 hours. Unfortunately, location doesn't always determine that. What video conferencing, for lack of a better word, or FaceTime is doing on a more simplistic level is it allows people to, they have to focus on you. And when you're doing a GChat or you're doing a regular telephone call, they're on email or they're reading something else or God only knows. And so when you have a video connection, they're focused on what you're saying. It really does make a difference.
Oh, that's a great piece of advice for managers. Let's stay with management advice, Tom, because I had an onboarding experience earlier this year with a company that I was going to 1099 with, and it was not a very good experience, very not positive experience. You have something, as I was doing research for this interview, on your blog, 6 things to do in a new hire's first week, and that one popped out at me. So let's just dig into that. What are some things, and how important is that first week?
The first week is, it's really the equivalent of a first date, right? And if you just show up at the restaurant 20 minutes late, if you go to pick somebody up and you don't get out of your car, there's really some basic things that you want to do when a new hire starts to make them feel welcome. Having their desk ready is such a basic thing, and it doesn't make a difference if it's a 1099 or a W-2 employee. You want them to come into the office and have them feel welcome in the environment. It's the most important thing, to have a computer ready for them and a login, to have somebody sit down with them, if not the manager, a senior member of the team, to take 25 minutes to sit down and talk to them and explain. And even if it's utter chaos, to acknowledge the chaos and apologize for the chaos and say, this is how we roll, but I want to make sure that you have a clear understanding of what we're about, where things are, give them a tour of the office, and people will say, well, we're paying them good money. Bullcrap. You need to take the opportunity to make people feel welcome. You've invited them into your house as a manager, as a director, VP, CEO, what have you. And now you need to lay out the red carpet. And everything isn't going to be Google-esque and giving them presents and doing backflips and massages at lunch breaks. But you can sure as heck make them feel welcome and make sure they know where the things are within the office.
I tell you, my personal front page, that would have gone a long way to that 1099 working out as opposed to fizzling out after the first quarter. Tom, let's stick with this for a second. 1099, W-2. It seems like the workforce is a little more a la carte right now. I'll again use myself. I can get my health care for my family through a union contract that I have, but I might want to do some other things as well. What's the advantage of a 1099 over a W-2 or vice versa?
It really depends a lot on where people are at in life, too. And now you mentioned being a member of a union, so that's a whole different ballgame. There's other people that they don't want to be part of a union for a variety of different reasons. So what do they do? And if you relocate to a different city, and before you go and take a quote-unquote permanent job, you may do 1099 or temporary work or things like that to try it out. But the overwhelming desire for most people is if the money works out, that they want to be part of an ongoing team. And that is really the disconnect is, do you want that collegial relationship with your coworkers that you know that if you put up good work and you are part of that team, you won't have to go try to line up your next job versus the ability of flexibility where, you know what, I've managed my lifestyle where I can crank it out for 9 months, make enough money, and take the summer off or the holidays off. It's all what different people want. And quite frankly, right now there's a huge thing to try to position people in this stereotype for forever. You can be a 1099 worker today, and it doesn't mean that in 3 or 4 years, 3 or 4 months, whenever, that you can't go and want to be a W-2 employee and be at the same company for 10 years.
Good advice. We're speaking with Tom Gimbel. He's the chief of LaSalle Network. Tom, tell me a little bit about the San Francisco office and how things have progressed there.
We've had it open for a little while now, for well over a year, and it is doing really, really well. I've got a team of 6 recruiters out there. We've got a client base, and actually, in 2016, in our first full calendar year, we were named one of the 101 best and brightest companies in the San Francisco Bay Area, so we're really proud of what we're doing out there.
I think that's the last time we had you on the show was when that good news came out. Tom, before I have to let you go, coming off of vacation season, is there a good duration for a vacation? I mean, you want to get off the grid a little bit. It's proven that it helps the brain kind of catch up, refuels the tank, if you will, recharges the battery. Is there a too long vacation or a too short vacation?
Well, I don't think there's ever a too short vacation. I think getting away for a long weekend, I know different people, they'll say, I'll take 5 or 6 3 or 4 day trips over a year versus taking one or two week trips. And so I think you need to find out what works best for your brain and what you want to accomplish from a vacation. I really believe that there isn't a one-size-fits-all mentality.
Okay.
That you have to look at where you are in the organization, what your responsibilities are, and also, and what most employees don't do is they don't look at the flow of the business and match that up with their vacation. Right? Teachers know you take time off at summer or over Christmas. They don't take off 2 weeks in February.
Right?
Yeah. It's the same thing with work, right? You don't take off, and if you're in radio, during ratings week, right? You've got to know what the flow is, and it's the same thing in corporate America. Know your business and go away when things get a little slow.
Tom, let's get a little macro. Last question. Labor market seems to be firming up. A lot of the jobs are reportedly not ideal necessarily. What has got your brain in focus right now when it comes to the macroeconomic labor force?
I think on the macro level, people are looking for news. And we are in a situation right now where unemployment is under 5%. And people will say, well, that's manipulated. Well, it's the same manipulation that's been going on for 70 years. So the number is accurate, even if it's skewed accuracy. Mm-hmm. And we have a low unemployment rate. We have a high stock market. We have corporate earnings. Companies are hiring. And we can prepare for the worst, but let's live in the moment from a standpoint of the jobs market and realize they're there. Go to school. Get your certification. Take additional classes. If you work hard, there are great opportunities available in every single state in the country.
Tom Gimbel, we always learn something when you're on. Thank you for your time.
Good to be with you, man.
That was Tom Gimbel. Tom is a national expert on the topics of labor market trends and company culture and hiring. He's also the founder and CEO of LaSalle Networks, a national staffing and recruiting firm. They have offices in Chicago and San Francisco. For links to Tom's endeavors and advice, look for the story that goes with this week's show at kgoradio.com/techonomics. Everything you need is in that article. Coming up next, we're double dipping into the workplace scene, this time with another talent and recruitment executive. She has some data about how we communicate at work. Basically, is email ever going to die?
No, email's going to be around. I mean, that's what they're saying. People choose to use email as their first way of communicating. Next would be in-person meetings, and that's for more collaboration. And then it's to instant messaging.
We also talk about salary negotiations and some trendy perks. That's right after this next break, so please come on back. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.